Hello and welcome back to the Investability Podcast. I am John Heumann and I am joined as always by Michael Taylor of ShiftingShares.com. How are you doing, Michael?
Pretty good, thanks, John. How's your holiday?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Good to hear.
Pretty much 2 full weeks without any market news is bliss when markets are like these.
That would give me sleepless nights, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I don't have sleepless nights, do I? Because I'm a long-term investor.
Yeah, that's true.
A long-term investor is also largely in cash.
There's a good market to be in cash, yeah. It gives you lots of options. You know, you can exercise over the coming weeks, months, even months. Years.
Years, months, years, who knows? But I mean, you know, it has been, so before I went away, obviously, I think we've spoken about this before, but the 16th of June was where the markets actually turned up again after some pretty horrible months. And it's kind of kept going. It's been a bit of a ride upwards. And I think there were a lot of people out there suggesting that the bottom was in. And we spoke about this last time we spoke. But you know, even I'm sitting there thinking, have I got this wrong? Have I got this wrong?
it's hard to say, isn't it? But yeah. I get the feeling it's a bear market rally.
Yeah, me too. But it's still, you know, when you see market, it's the first time I've ever had anything approaching FOMO in. It's probably a good thing that I was away because it stopped me from doing anything dumb, like piling back in. And, you know, I have looked around, I have been tempted. I've seen some nice companies that I like the look of, but I just worry that, well, not worry, but I think I can buy them more cheaply in the future.
I think so, yeah. I mean, even things, there's still profit warnings coming out. They're still getting hammered. You know, if we were at peak pessimism, this stuff just wouldn't be happening. So, I mean, how many have we had this week? Jules, today, Angling Direct,
yeah,
yesterday. I'm sure there'll have been some the week before. Obviously, Cineworld as well, probably going to go bust now. And that one was crazy because, you know, the yesterday, I think there was about 250 million market cap, you know, trading around 13 pence. Obviously worth zero, has been worth zero for a long time, though, it does have to be said. And yeah, the market just never really marked it down. It's only really today that it's gone to like 2p.
I thought I saw it drop heavily a couple of days ago, then bounce back, and it's dropped really heavily again today. 65%.
Yeah. Sorry, so it wasn't yesterday, the profit one, and it was earlier on in the week.
Yeah,
opened up at 13 spot five, went down to 8, then I think it rallied 40% the next day.
That's right, yeah.
And now it's just, you know, continued its trajectory downwards.
It's a proper dead company. I mean, you know, it's had that feel over it for a long time, which is, you know, why I actually wrote a piece for Vox Markets, who I'm now doing some work with, talking about, you know, this kind of, there's been a sort of enthusiasm for sort of shares that have been heavily sold off in particular sectors, particularly sort of consumer facing, whether that be leisure or retail. And I just think, you know, people were getting a bit excited that you know, the worst is behind us and we've got, you know, recoveries on the way and buy the losers because they'll bounce. And yeah, some of these companies aren't really structurally challenged after, you know, what's been 2 or 3 horrendous years for them. And Cineworld has always been, it's the poster child of a dead company, really. I mean, it took on so much debt. I've used it so many times as an example of everything that's wrong. Both with, you know, business management and markets. And you know, I think we're seeing the end game now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in 2020 trading it both long and short. And, you know, that was over 2 years ago now. I think it got to around 20p or something silly, but it was over 100p, like, not too long ago, actually.
March 21.
I mean, okay, we had the bounce then. But, I mean, it was still valued pretty high this year. You know, at the start of the year, it was 50, so... I mean, that's just crazy. It's a dead company.
I've just flicked onto the summary screen on the SharePad company analysis tab. Debt to market cap ratio of Cineworld. Have a guess what it's showing.
I've never seen anything like 100.
Oh, that's positively modest.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, keep going. Higher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, of course. Bruce Forsyth. 1,000, yeah.
1,000, no, keep going.
5,000?
Nearly, 5,777. I mean, I shouldn't laugh because some people would have, you know, would have lost some money on this. But I mean, there's been plenty of opportunities to get out of this one.
Yeah, I mean, even as a trader, you know, you look at that chart. It's trading below all the moving averages. It's trending down. It's every week. It's, you know, every month is doing new lows. I mean, you look at that chart. It's just a one way, like a ski slope down. So it's not as if people have any warning. Like you, neither of us like to see investors lose money, but it's not as if you weren't warned. So
no,
you know, learn from it and move on.
It's a real shame because many, many years ago, before I became the editor at the Investors Chronicle, and was on the company's team, you know, I actually tipped Cineworld. It's a really nice little company. You know, it's focused exclusively on the UK market. You know, it had an offer that really had started to resonate with cinema goers. You know, it was always budget friendly.
And, what year was this?
Oh, goodness me, 2009 or 10.
Okay, right.
Show my age there. Long time ago. And then, you know, it actually made what I thought was quite a decent acquisition. Yeah, the bit of a problem with the CMA, Competition and Markets Authority. It bought Picture House, you know, the little chain of, right. Yeah, they're sort of you know, artsy cinemas, and you know, that was all very well and good. And then the thing got bought, and you know, who could blame the management there for selling out? And the new management team just got you know, this idea in their head of global domination. it really was. So they first of all, they bought in Eastern Europe, I think Poland. And obviously took on a fair amount of debt to buy that. And then they decided they were going to buy America's largest cinema chain, Regal. No, was that the Canadian one? Can't remember. They're actually in dispute as well. They're getting sued for pulling out of an acquisition as well.
Is that Cineplex? Or is that Regal? Yeah. Is it the same thing?
Oh, I actually can't remember which one
doesn't matter now. It's moot.
It's a moot point. But the point was, you know, this is a company when it says, you know, we're going to dominate the world cinema chains and we're going to borrow to do it, you know, even before the pandemic struck, you know, there is a big layer of risk been introduced into the management of that business at that point. You know, borrowing loads of money when interest rates are really low, you know, well, how long was that going to last? Not forever. I mean people might have thought it would, but it was never going to last forever, low interest rate environment. So I think, you know, any sort of sensible observer of business and fundamental analysis would have got out of this company a very, 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 very long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, it traded at 300 at one point, didn't it?
I think
this was around 2019. It's sad, but
it's
not as if it was never going to happen. Yeah, you're right. On that point, I bet the directors didn't really have that much stock, because if they're the sort of type to just borrow to fund this big mighty empire, they're probably not likely to have material holdings themselves. But generally that's what happens.
Well, I'm looking now, and I mean, the CEO has 20% of the company.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, well, that's surprising.
According to SharePoint, but then, you know, that may be, you know, a recent phenomenon. This was a big, widely held company, so that might be a more recent thing. You know, he might pump some money into the company. Who knows? I haven't really been
giving himself nil cost options. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? But
it's not typical owner operator stuff, though, is it? To go crazy with debt?
No. No, it's not. The other thing I just noticed, actually, just looking at SharePad, is the consensus rating is hold, and the target price is 43p.
Okay.
So, I mean, you do wonder, looking at things like that, what the analyst community are up to.
Yeah, well, I read a note yesterday on a company I'm short of, and I just don't see how it's possible. Where do analysts, obviously, if they're hired by someone, they're never going to bite the hand that feeds. But there's that sense where they probably aren't as negative as they want to be.
But probably,
I mean, you were an analyst, weren't you? So how does that work, John?
No, I didn't stay an analyst very long, did I?
Well, true, yeah.
No, I got in a bit of trouble. I actually got in a bit of trouble because I had a basket of house stocks, and yeah, this was as the dot-com bubble was deflating, and there was one of them, and I won't name the company, no longer around, you won't be surprised to hear. But I remember speaking to management, said, right, you know, I need to update my forecasts. I need to, you know, what guidance are you going to give me? They said, well, we can't give you any guidance. We don't know. I said, well, how the hell am I supposed to put a rating on you then? They're just going, well, just put a rating on us. So I did. It was called withdrawing coverage. which apparently you couldn't do if it was a house stock. I got in all sorts of bother, and it's probably the beginning of the end of my shortish career as an equity analyst. On the sell side. Yeah, never mind.
We've done the bigger and better things.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. So yeah, so Cineworld has been, well, it's a sorry tale. I actually did look at Everyman the other day. I mean, you know, this is a company specific problem as well. You know, if it hadn't had the levels of leverage that it did, then it would probably be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's generated $250,000 cash flow in the last 6 months. But obviously, just the debt is staggering. What is it, like $5 billion or something crazy like that?
Oh, it's madness. It's madness. But, you know, so I was looking at Everyman, which is, you know, another UK cinema chain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their numbers were good. You know, it's...
surprisingly, because isn't that expensive, basically an expensive cinema?
Yeah, it's really expensive, but it's nice. It's the old experiential approach to cinema. You get, you know, tip the sofa and order nice food. But anyway, so yeah, it is a company specific problem, and you know, I think there will be, you know, the recovery is going to expose winners and losers. But I think it also means right now when you get a collapse like that, the baby will be being chucked out with the bathwater in a lot of cases. Let's have a look at Everyman's price today. Yeah, it's down 5% today. So yeah, it's looking pretty savage out there, even for companies that are reasonably well managed. Did you make any money on the Cineworld?
I did. Yeah, I shot it yesterday. I can't remember when it was now. This week's just gone by too quick. So I actually shorted it, closed it too early, then reopened it at a lower price when I came to my senses and thought actually I should stay short this. Yeah, close today though. I'm not sort of willing to hold to zero, because then you get margin to 100%, and it takes ages to get paid out. So
you do get paid eventually though. I assume
you do get paid eventually. Yeah, but is it worth it for that extra bit? Might as well just collect the cash and move on.
Yeah, yeah. So the other big faller today, I know this is Jewel. Have you been having a dabble with that one as well?
Yeah, so I'm short Jewels as well. Don't really see any reason to close. I mean, we had a few weeks ago, Next we're sniffing around with a potential equity investment. And I remember trying to go along, and my broker wasn't working, annoyingly. I'm sure it would have worked if it had been a losing trade, that's for certain. But yeah, that and the price ran up to like 50p or something, which is insane. And I think around 33p was the undisturbed before that news. So today's profit warning, you know, significantly below, and also expecting the covenants to be breached. For that stock to be trading at 30p today seems mental, because if you were Next, well, if I was Next, I would just wait for it to completely fold and do the Mike Ashley and pick it up out of admin. I mean, why would you pay $30 million for something when you can have first dibs on something for a couple? That doesn't really make sense, does it?
I was thinking that actually with City, in the case of Cineworld, that, you know, there are going to be bits of it that people want to grab.
Yeah. So, there's always scavengers. Yeah.
There will be scavengers knocking around. But yeah, I agree. If, you know, if something's going to disappear, and, you know, why pay more when you pay less?
I mean, I don't know if Jules is a zero, but I think 30 million for something which is fundamentally broken, because that is an expensive sort of aspirational brand, isn't it? It's not cheap. Yeah, they've blamed the weather today, but the problem is we're going into this well-documented cost of living crisis, and they're an upmarket brand, and people are going to trade down, and people are just going to spend less. So, and I don't really see any reason to rush to close it. Obviously, if it sort of rallies sharply, I'll have to think about either adding or just closing. But that I think that's a good risk to reward trade if you can short from around 30p. Yeah,
I don't like this company. I've never liked this company. Yeah. I think it's really niche. you know, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Niche, but it got a, you know, ideas that were perhaps bigger than the appeal of its brand. You know, where I live, out on the Suffolk coast, you know, you've got these sort of posh seaside towns like Southwold and Aldbrough. You know, that's Jules territory. Yeah. Real Jules territory. But yeah, I mean, I've seen those shops, and you know, they move around, and Southwold actually has two Jules shops, or it used to anyway.
maybe not for long.
I just could not see how a company like this is a long time ago. I'm having an argument, a debate about the prospects of this company many, many, many years ago. Because I just thought the appeal was so limited. I don't know whether it is up market. I think it's in the sort of Ted Bakery type area of retail. Neither cheap and cheerful, or you know, like a sort of aspirational. It's neither of those things. And I think the same is true of Ted Baker, and you know, the same. If you go back further, you know, the same was true of French Connection. You know, had it sort of, you know, moment in the sun. Superdry, I think.
Yeah, Superdry. I used to love Superdry.
What happened?
I don't know. I just don't love it anymore. It became not cool, and. Well, I mean, I was
became
cool anyway. It probably became cool when I stopped wearing it.
I think I wrote something on Superdry. I wrote a sales tip on it when I was at the IC, and I think it was because I'd been out and about, and I'd noticed that like sort of rotund middle-aged men like myself were walking around in Superdry tops, and it was like, oh, this brand is toast.
This brand's finished.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, Mike Ashley ends up buying these things anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Duncan has been the world's longest turnaround now, hasn't it? It's like Hornby.
Which one's that?
French Connection was a long turnaround. But yeah, Superdry has been in the process of turning itself around for 3 years, I think.
It's a strange company. Never got my head around it. But yeah, retail is just looking pretty horrible. Like you say, you know, the cost of living crisis is really biting. Funnily enough, I was just looking at British retail sales according to the ONS. Actually, rose 0.3% in July volumes. It's remarkable. Okay.
Is that July on July or July on June?
I would imagine it's July on July, but I couldn't say for sure because I'm reading off a Bloomberg article.
That'd be quite surprising. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But you know, I mean, the thing we are seeing, which is sort of slightly troubling, is it's what people do for leisure. People do shop for leisure, and you know,
crazy people.
Well, yeah, and people are still spending. You know. Using credit cards, so actually credit card spending is rocketing. And strangely enough, they use that. I've seen that referred to in certainly over in the US as a sign of economic strength.
Credit cards.
Hang on a minute. Everybody's spending on credit cards, therefore the consumer is strong. No. Everyone's spending on credit cards because they're not strong.
Well, I mean, I can see that view because I mean, I pretty much only spend on credit cards.
But presumably, you pay it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's the cumulative amount of consumer debt.
Ah, okay, right. It's
rising.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So you know, and obviously because the amount of expenditure is rising as well. So yeah, it's not being paid off.
Right. Okay. Got it. Yeah. So I'm not sure how that will be a sign of strength.
No, I'm not. I'm not either.
Unless you're rich enough to not care, but that's certainly not me. So yeah.
I guess it's basically who's telling you the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are all sorts of stories flying around at the moment. And the big story when I was away was obviously the US inflation figures, which everybody celebrated. So, you know, I think they came in, the US CPI, I can't remember which month it was for, came in 8.5%. It was expected to be 9% and a bit. So and everyone kind of was like, yay, inflation's over.
Well done. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely not. Though I don't think. I mean, a lot of it is basically energy bills, isn't it? It's just, you know, like we saw with Fevertree, glass was actually a big factor of the profit warning, whereas I'd thought it would be supply and just the cost of energy is pushing everything up.
And in the case of the CPI figure in the US, price of petrol, gas. Has been coming down quite significantly. The same's happened here, actually. You see it, you know, on my way down to Cornwall, I'm looking at, you know, we were looking at sort of £2 a litre, you know, not far short of that. And
yeah,
today, I drove up the road, it's 165. That component has come out of the figures quite sharply. But there are other factors that make up inflation. And, the sort of realist view, the pragmatic view of economists over in the US is that actually there is lots within a lot of inflationary pressures that haven't even come through in the figures yet. The rent being the biggest one over there.
Yeah.
So, I think we're still in for quite an extended period of inflation. And, I think that, I guess the central bank that everybody is going to look at is the Federal Reserve. And there was some minutes out this week which showed that they are extremely concerned about inflation, but they're also extremely concerned about the economy now. I mean, you wonder what they do most of the time. Seems to take them a couple of months to catch up. I just think we've got this horrible, box, this sort of noxious combination of sticky inflation, and it's going to be sticky, and recession, which there is going to be.
It's no longer a big out on a limb call anymore, is it, the recession?
No, not really. I mean, the only way there won't be a recession is if they change the definition again. But
well, you can always do that, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think you've got to be, with these recessionary pressures, the oil price went up. Oil price goes down, everyone cheers, oil inflation is dissipating. But the oil price coming down is a sign that that all is not well in the economy. I don't know how I understand quite how people are reading these figures at the moment. It's sort of, I mean, they are hard to read. It's hard to make sense. Yeah. But that's why I would urge caution. If you can't understand something, then don't act upon something you don't understand.
I can't. That's why I use charts, because I'm just not clever enough to understand it.
No one is clever enough to understand
it. I suspect that's probably true. Yeah, but there's always someone who says they can. If you think about it, the price of oil, how many different variables? There's like hundreds of variables. And then what are the chances of you being able to model all those variables and giving them an accurate probability and influence factor and then coming out with, what should happen? The reality is nobody can, because...
No.
If you remember in February 2020, COVID was sweeping through Italy. It was clearly going to go everywhere else. And yet the markets were at all-time highs. So how did that happen? I mean, clearly markets are not efficient and nobody really actually knows anything.
I mean, the efficient markets hypothesis, I think even the guy that came up with that, Eugene Fama, I think even he has admitted that markets aren't efficient.
I mean, it's a nice theory, and yeah, they should be in theory, but they're just not.
Yeah, I think that's particularly true at the smaller end of the market as well.
Even on larger stuff like Cineworld, it's clearly been a zero for several years, but people have ascribed hundreds of millions of value to it.
It's a strange thing, but it goes back
the triumph of optimists.
Again, I think we spoke about this as well, because I kind of did some research on this. I think over the long term, that's true. In the aggregate sum of the markets, optimists will win out. At an individual level, you just can't be an optimist. You have to be a pessimist if you're invested in an individual company and ask yourself what could go wrong.
Yeah,
have a view of what could go right, but also ask yourself what could go wrong. Because you might find something that completely undermines the investment case. So yeah, it's a funny one. It's a funny one, but I think, stock market rules of thumb, and I wrote about this week, are a waste of everybody's time.
Okay, why is that?
because I was writing about sell in May, hasn't worked. It worked once between 2010 and 2020.
Don't sell in May.
If you think about 2021, when the market sold off as the pandemic struck, what if you'd have sold out completely, you'd have missed a very, very large rebound. I think there's a contradictory advice between, you don't lose money by taking a profit, but also run your winners. Okay, so which one is it?
You sort of can go bust taking a profit, though. That's the problem.
If your
profits are too small and they don't outweigh your losses, then you absolutely can go bust. I mean, that is how you go bust, because your losses are bigger than your profits. So it's you can't go bust taking a profit. Well, not on that specific trade. But if you do that over time and your profits are just down that big, then you will go bust. So yeah, it's a very idiotic saying. Sorry to the person who created that saying.
I think the problem is not that, you know, not that there isn't some kind of kernel of truth in a lot of these statements, but that they were sort of created at a specific point, a specific place in a specific market, a specific time in history, and they've sort of stuck. And, you know, there may be some statistical evidence to support them at certain, you know, certain times in the cycle, but they don't take into account, you know, the difference between individual markets, the differences between individual investors, you know, the different objectives that all investors have. So you know, I think using rules of thumb like sell in May or run your wheel, yeah, or, you know, you've got to be an optimist should be banned.
But I certainly hope no one's listening to buy when everyone's fearful.
Warren Buffett, another one
on Cineworld. That's not going to work out too well, I don't think.
Well, there you go. There's another one. Perfect example. But yeah, you know, you get on Twitter and you just see a lot of this sort of, like, you know, this sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it makes me a little bit cross, which is why I kind of enjoyed two weeks away. It's like no, I'm going to sit in a field and do nothing for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's probably quite therapeutic, I imagine.
It was, yeah, it was. And bloody hot as well. Bloody hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really, really hot. Yeah. I mean, it's also slightly worrying, the old heat wave. I mean,
There was there's a river in France which, in all of recorded history, has never dried up, and apparently now has. It's completely dry.
Incredible.
So that's not great.
No, and, you know, I was actually reading something about, I think it's the Rhine, you know, which is a major trade route in Germany, which has fallen to such levels that some of the sort of vessels can't actually pass through it.
Yeah.
Major problem, because it's a trade route, basically. Mm. And, you know, we've got...
I used to live right next to it.
Oh, right. All right.
Yeah, and Dusseldorf.
Oh, it's a big old river.
Yeah, that's quite a fast-flowing river as well. I wouldn't want to swim in it. It'd easily drown you.
Yeah, but not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Well, not at the moment, no.
So you know, here is another, you know, more economic pain. I mean, Georgie, I hadn't heard a weather-related profit warning from a retailer for quite some time, but...
I think the last one was Crawshaw.
I remember that.
Remember that chain of butchers which blamed, you know, it was a discounter and then decided it wanted to be more upmarket. Failed completely. But I think they blamed the weather and Euro 2016 or something. If I remember rightly.
Okay.
And it went completely bust, just never recovered.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So if you ever see a weather related profit warning, yeah, you should consider selling, because that's just no good.
You know, that is actually there is an old rule of thumb that I do follow. If I ever saw a profit warning from a retailer that blamed the weather, that's going on the garbage pile. Anyway, so even, you know, at company level, you've got to believe, you know, Jules, when they say they're not selling enough Max, although I'm not sure why they'd be selling Max in summer anyway, but there you go. But yeah,
it should be more diversified and sell the right product.
Well, there is that's why I always felt the weather related blame game was always nonsensical. But, you know, actually, you know, water shortages, just like energy shortages, are really 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 bad news.
You know, we've got a hose pipe ban now.
Have you?
In London, yeah.
We haven't got one in Suffolk yet, which is odd, because this is the driest county. And you know, there is a drought here. You know, I've spoken to farmers, and you know, they can't get so the wheat crop, fantastic, you know, amazing, harvested early. You know, you've never seen so much hay in your life around here. But things like potato growers have struggled to, you know, they can't lift the crops because the ground is so dry, so hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that means, you know, they've got to use water to get it out, or they've, you know, they damage the crop when they get it out. So, you know, this is all contributing to further inflationary pressure. And actually, we saw the UK inflation figures, which I think CPI breached 10%. I think it was 10.1%, which was again ahead of forecast. And it was food and grocery driving up prices. So, you know, it's even this heat wave is bad news. It's bad news for markets as well.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to be worried about. I mean, there's a lot to be optimistic about, but...
Right, is that? Come on, give me some optimism, Michael. Let's end on a positive note.
Well, I mean, stocks always move up or down, so as long as they do, there's an opportunity.
That's okay for you because you're a trader, but you know, give
yeah. Yeah, well, I guess that when stocks go down, it's an opportunity for investors, right? Because they can buy more stocks cheap.
That's true.
And if you're a long-term investor thinking in terms of years, you're probably not too worried about the next few months.
No.
Or that's how I would see it.
Do you know, it's funny, actually. You know, it's funny you say that. So I mean, I say I'm largely cash, but I've got a few holdings, which I started to accumulate before, mm-hmm. you know, the world sort of went to hell in a handcart towards the end of last year. One of them was Somero, which I think we've spoken about in our deep dives.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good company, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the shares had sold off. It was a good company, but the shares had sold off, you know, from that's about £6, and they'd sold off to about, you know, £3.50 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing really, you know, company specific. Certainly not related to valuation because the shares mm-hmm. are cheap as chips. This week they've started climbing. Up 20%, up 21% in 3 months.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all, but like, why?
Yeah. Well, a lot of these stocks are basically cash inflows, aren't they? I mean, it's something that I never really considered properly until this year. Stocks aren't really driven on sentiment, but basically people taking money out and putting money back in. Because if you think if all private investors start selling and they want to get cash heavy, there's going to be a net outflow of money in the market. So yeah, they might sell something, but they're not going to reinvest that somewhere else. So they might sell and prop up the price somewhere else, but they're not doing that because they're taking the cash out. So when you think about 2020, we had all of these people punting the money in the market. We had cash inflow on every single asset. You know, like, look, crypto is a perfect example. You know, people buying pictures of monkeys and scissors and all, you know, for ridiculous six-figure sums. And now that everyone's pulled the cash out, and everyone's lost some money, and now crypto is, you know, not doing as well as it was.
Well, a lot of crypto has busted flush. Bitcoin, I hadn't looked at the Bitcoin price in a while. So, I mean, it had been climbing.
Yeah, what is it now?
$21,500 a Bitcoin. Okay. Not that it matters. What does the dollar price of Bitcoin matter if you're a Bitcoin
yeah.
master? only about the Bitcoin. It's down 7.5% today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're in a bit of a risk off mode again. Oh, NASDAQ is down 2% today. You know, we've seen some really big bounce backs in some of the big names, big tech names. Tesla's been flying. The worst news that comes out of that company, the better the share price does, it seems. I don't understand it.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Anyway, I digress. I was just saying that, you know, looking at my portfolio, it's actually held up all right. Mm. You know, it's really, I mean, it's value. I've noticed that when markets get a bit wobbly, my portfolio seems to do okay. So I really have gone the other way to sort of the sort of bull market growthy type portfolio. But I need growth eventually. Mm. And I think you're right. I think the thing to be optimistic about is that at some point I'll have the opportunity to get it. And you know, anyone else who's shifted into cash will be thinking much the same thing, I would imagine.
Mm. It'll come back as it always does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bust.
Stay solvent.
Yeah, stay solvent. Don't lose all your money. Don't buy anything that has a ridiculous amount of debt either, I think is probably sensible.
Yeah, I tend to be sort of on the small cap side as well. You know, I mean, there's stuff out there that's, you know, developing some interesting tech or, you know, sort of projects, yeah, whether in the exploration side of things or biotechs that, you know, are on the if you happen to be looking at those spaces, which I tend not to, cash burn and cash positions, you've got to look at them.
Yeah, I mean, those are the best trades at the moment, finding companies with weak balance sheets and shorting them and then trying to cover in the placing. But half the time, after a company's raised money, the share price just goes down. So sometimes you shouldn't even cover it.
Yeah, I mean, I also think, you know, on the flip side of that, I suspect there'll be some nice little companies that that are approaching that inflection point, you know, that profitability inflection point, that are probably getting dragged down with them, that have the cash
to get to that
aren't burning. So, you know, if you're of the short inclination, find the ones that are going to run out of money. If you're of the long inclination, find the ones that have been harshly judged that have the good cash position to survive.
I think there's going to be a generational opportunity in the next year.
I've heard someone else call it that. Wifey. I don't know if you've seen Wifey.
What's that?
Wifey. Wifey's a Twitter account. It's a trader.
Right.
You should look him up. It is a him, by the way.
Right.
because his wife's Twitter account is The Real Wifey.
Okay.
but it's a seriously astute. Seriously astute investor or trader,
Add him.
Definitely worth a follow. But he's talking about this as well. You know, this is a bear market rally. You know, we're going to see some new lows, right? You know, even prior to what we saw coming up to June 16th, and beyond that, will come the opportunity to make generational wealth.
I mean, if you last until the next 6 months, 12 months, when everyone's sort of thrown in the towel. I mean, I've spoke to, wheelie dealer Cockney Rebel about this before. 2008, 2009, companies would come out with terrible results, but because everyone expected worse, they rallied. And it was like shooting fish in a barrel. That's that, when we get to that point of maximum pessimism, which we are nowhere near at, I'm sure. There's still people on Twitter talking about stocks, they're quite happy. Once they've been ground down and lost the money or exited, and then that's when Warren Buffett's thing comes into play by when everyone is, but only at the right time.
At the right time
that he's talking about,
Exactly. At the right time.
At the right time.
You know, there isn't blood on the streets at the moment. Things. You know, there are companies that are still, trading not too far from record highs, particularly in the tech space. I've seen some companies that are highly valued quality companies sold off sharply. They sort of, regained, near 50% of the losses, which takes them back very, very close to those all-time highs. So, there isn't blood on the streets yet. And that's the problem, I guess, with the rules of thumb, is knowing when to apply them.
Yeah, I think that's sensible. Yeah, wise advice.
Yeah, wise advice.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, that's enough talk about markets. I'm going to go sit in the field again.
I'll have fun.
Stay away from them. Yeah, absolutely. And let's do this again in a couple of weeks. Now that I've remembered that I'm not actually going on holiday again in a couple of weeks. you've got a new podcast, haven't you? That you're
I've got a new trader interview series on YouTube. Which absolutely I expect you to come on, John, and tell your story. That would be nice. I know you're not a trader, but we can just change the title, Trader Investor Series. But yeah, please check it out if you're listening.
You got a name? Is it on the usual channels?
It's I think if you just type in into Google YouTube Shifting Shares, it'll probably come up.
Excellent. Yeah, so
I don't know how I find it, so that's probably how you can find it.
I saw it on Twitter. I watched you talking to Cockney Rebel. It's definitely worth a watch, and
Oh, thanks.
Go and have a look at that. Excellent. Good speaking to you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, John. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Have a good week. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.